Good morning, all. It's another beautiful day. Your attention, please.
Welcome again to Back in the Village, the Prisoner podcast. You might be asking yourself, what is that strange music? That has nothing to do with the prisoner, but you'd be wrong, because that is the theme song to Danger Man, which is the show we're covering today, Danger Man being the show that Patrick McGoohan was on right before he made The Prisoner. So we'll be talking about something a little bit different today, but I think you're going to enjoy it. We're going to be looking at three chunks of the series of Danger Man. The very first episode, called A View from the Villa, an episode from the second series called Colony 3, and Kiroshi and Shindashima, which were put together as the final series-ending movie. This is going to be a long one. I think this is our longest show, so strap in. But no, I think you're going to enjoy it. The notes this week, we've got some more information about Danger Man. We've got a link to a website where I got a lot of this information, dangerman.co.uk, as well as some other fun things we mentioned, and a link where you can listen to all three versions of the Danger Man theme song in one handy YouTube video. So, that's about it. I hope you enjoy our coverage of Danger Man. I mean, how could you not? This music is great. Good morning, good morning. We are back again on a lovely, dreary day on the Prisoner podcast with myself, Clay McCormick, and with me, as always, is Wes Teasdale. How are you doing, Wes?
Good, Clay. How are you?
Not too bad.
Getting to the finish line here, right?
We are. We're getting close to the finish line, so we're going to take a quick breather this week, and this week we're going to not talk about The Prisoner. We're going to talk about the show that preceded The Prisoner, starring Patrick McGoohan, a show called Danger Man, which in America was called Secret Agent.
Yep. Both titles, neither one seems like they tried very hard on either. Like, whatever.
Yeah, well, I mean, you have to remember, I mean, it's when it premiered, there's not a lot of this stuff on.
Right, so it was so long ago. It's
not quite The Man from U.N.C.L.E. or Man in Suitcase or
Man with Cat. man with Dog.
Man Who Works for Government in Secret Capacity.
Every government has its Secret Service branch. America, it's CIA. France, Deuxième Bureau. England, MI5. A messy job? Well, that's when they usually call on me or someone like me. Oh, yes. My name is Drake. John Drake.
So, why are we talking about this? I talked about it a little bit in the first episode of the Prisoner podcast. This show is the show that brought Patrick McGoohan in, made him a star. He was a well-renowned actor, stage actor. He'd done some live TV. He had been highly regarded for a play he did on television called Brand, mm-hmm. which you can watch on YouTube. It's pretty interesting. It's pretty intense. But this was the first TV series that he did, and it made him a star. But it took a while. It didn't hit right away. So the history behind the show is it's 1960. It's the early days of television. And Lou Grade, who ran ITV, ITC, if I can't remember the letters.
I think ITV sounds familiar anyway.
Was looking for a new show. He had been successful with a Robin Hood show, and he wanted another show that was cheaper to produce because Robin Hood requires all sorts of
sets, you know, and costumes. Sets and stuff.
So he commissioned a writer named Ralph Smart, who was an Australian writer. He was a veteran of the TV, British TV for a few years. He had written for Robin Hood to come up with some ideas. And one of these ideas was an idea that Ralph Smart actually workshopped with Ian Fleming. He had a relationship with Ian Fleming, and they had actually worked together to try and bring James Bond to TV.
Mm-hmm.
The partnership fell apart. And this character that they were working on was reworked, and it started off as a show called Lone Wolf, which was an espionage thriller about one man going it alone in a world of spies.
Sure.
This was, you know, piqued the interest of Lou Grade. They kind of workshopped it a little bit, changed the title, came up with a new character, named John Drake. John Drake originally was very much like James Bond. He was a, you know, smooth womanizer, tough guy, quick to shoot first, ask questions later, kind of spy. And all of this is interesting because this show that ended up being Danger Man predates the first James Bond movie by 2 years. The show debuted in 1960, and Dr. No didn't come out till 1962.
Okay. I was curious about that. That's interesting.
Yeah, it really is, especially in the way that the show changes. So they found Patrick McGoohan, who, as I said, was a widely known, highly regarded actor at the time, but hadn't done anything on TV, really. And, of course, McGoohan had his own thoughts about the character.
Sure.
And he did not want him to be a womanizer or use violence or anything. And he demanded these changes to make him more, use his brain more. No guns, you know, no pointless sex. A character of high morals.
Sure.
And, you know, which is, I think it's an interesting change because, as we've talked about, it's not something you see very often.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was brought on board. He was granted all of these changes, and he helped create the character of John Drake. And the show debuted on September 11th in 1960, and the first series lasted one season. It's only 39 episodes. They're all half an hour long. And
it's a ton of episodes.
No, it's like, a lot for one series. Yeah. That's a lot of episodes.
Yeah. Only half hour, though, so I guess you'd call it 20 full hours of TV.
Right.
Yeah, strange.
Yeah, it lasted one season, 39 episodes. And it just didn't catch on for whatever reason. In America, it didn't catch, so they shelved it. And in this first series, John Drake was an American agent who worked for NATO.
Yes.
Which is really random. I don't really know how to... It's like a very non-specific... You know what?
Yeah, well, it's he went from two very specific agencies that don't really seem like they'd have a lot to do with each other.
Yeah.
And it'd be like a baseball player who goes to work for the IRS. You're like, okay, I don't really understand why he's being sent over to NATO to do this when the CIA would, you think, especially because NATO's not seen as like this, you know, impressively on top of everything. I guess this would have been the end of World War II, though, right? Well, not really the end of World War II. 15 years, but so, I guess NATO's still seen as kind of probably like a global good at that point, like probably
just
more.
It just seems to me, it has always seemed to me as like a choice made by, I guess it's a more global choice. It's a more global choice than saying the CIA or something.
Yeah.
And it's more of a, it's something that's not quite tied to a single government.
Yeah. Well, you know, it feels less like American, I don't know if you want to go deep, but like American imperialism, if he works for like a conglomerate, like a global organization.
Right. It's not, it becomes less of a British TV show trying to approximate American stuff into just like a more global thing.
Yeah.
And it's still a strange choice, but you know, I'm sure that most people didn't know what the hell NATO did. I mean, I'm not even sure I know what NATO does now. But yeah, he was an American agent who worked for NATO and had all these, you know, global adventures.
Yep.
And it didn't catch, and they shelved it for about 4 years until James Bond hits. James Bond, Dr. No hits in 1962, like I said, and the James Bond craze explodes. And, well, it probably exploded with From Russia with Love, but it starts with Dr. No.
Yep.
And in From Russia with Love, you get, you know, the first appearance of all the gadgets and stuff, which actually Danger Man also beats to the punch by four years or so.
Yep.
And also, the other thing that shows up in the first series of Danger Man, which I can't find anyone who can prove this, But the apocryphal story is that Bond in the movies saying, "My name is Bond, James Bond," is a lift from Danger Man. Because at the beginning of every episode of Danger Man, he says, "My name is Drake, John Drake."
Yeah.
Can't prove that. You know, who knows? But the success of McGoohan in Danger Man led him to be considered as one of the... to be considered for the role of James Bond, which obviously he clearly did not get. And I don't think he wanted it anyway, because all of the things that he hates about characters are what James Bond is.
Yep.
But after the James Bond craze hits, they bring the show back in 1964. This time in England, it's referred to as Danger Man, but in America, it's referred to as Secret Agent. It gets a snappy new theme song, which you've probably heard, even if you haven't seen the show. Mm-hmm. Danger Man by Johnny... Secret Agent Man by Johnny Rivers. And this time, the show is hour-long episodes, but Drake... It's the same character, John Drake, but he's English now. Yeah. Or he's at least from the UK.
Yeah.
It's not defined whether or not he's English or if he's Irish. He's Patrick McGoohan, basically. And this time the series ran for...
Well, he works for MI6 or MI5, whatever it is.
He works for a company called, or a division called M9.
Oh, M9. Okay.
Which is another change very reflective of James Bond.
Yeah.
This show, this version of the show is a lot... it's longer. It's a lot... There's a lot more opportunity for character development and deeper stories. McGoohan does, across both series, McGoohan does really, really good character work. He has a lot of undercover type things he's got to do, where he's got to put on different personalities and stuff, and he's really good at it. I mean, he makes the show. He's very, very good. And the hour-long format of Secret Agent just seemed to lend itself to better shows. A lot of these episodes are just great episodes of TV.
Mm-hmm.
And that series ran for 47 episodes. And right around the time they were going to do a third series, McGoohan decided he didn't want to do it anymore. He was getting tired. They were, retreading everything. And he decided that he wanted to do something else.
Yep.
That something else became, obviously, The Prisoner. But before he left, the final two episodes that they produced were combined for a movie which ran in cinemas in Britain, but it only was a TV movie in America, called Kuroshi, which was a two episodes, Kuroshi and Shindashima, which are not story. The storylines aren't connected. They are tangentially.
Mm-hmm.
They involve like the same villain. But they are not direct sequels to one another. And they're the only two episodes of the show shot in color. And, these were already ready to go, or they had already been scheduled to be produced when McGoohan decided he was going to leave.
Yep.
And so they shot these, McGoohan left, they put these out as a TV movie, that was the end of Secret Agent, and then a couple years later, maybe a year later, out comes The Prisoner.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the big reasons we're covering this is because, A, it's interesting, I find this history stuff fascinating, especially when you look at how, so many people who transferred over from Danger Man transferred into The Prisoner. We've talked about that a lot.
Yep.
And also the never-ending debate over whether or not John Drake is actually number six.
Right.
We can talk.
JD.
We can talk about our thoughts on that. But there's an important aspect of this that we can talk about when we get to the end that will probably be disappointing to most people who care.
Okay.
With that in mind.
Excellent. That'll be the tagline of the podcast.
This is going to be disappointing to people who care. Says Variety. So with that in mind, let's talk about A View from the Villa, the very first episode.
I was in Rome when I was summoned by the frightened executive of the bank. He was in no way distressed by the death of his president. Only unbalanced accounts could distress Mr. Finch. The man had ink in his veins.
It was, like I said, it debuted in September of 1960, And does this have any connections to The Prisoner outside of Patrick McGoohan? Yes, the assistant director is David Tomlin, who became the co-creator and assistant director of The Prisoner.
Yep.
How'd you feel about this episode?
It's fine. It's certainly difficult to make a spy episode 25 minutes long.
Mm-hmm.
It was weirdly refreshing at first. I guess if you want to go over his like change, he's the most different of an actor in the pilot or with this View from the Villa thing.
Yeah.
He's like, he's very laid back, mm-hmm. sort of,
yeah.
almost to a weird.
He's very, he's kind of jaunty.
Yeah. He's not even really flirty with people, but he's like, He's kind of friendly to like a strange degree. Like he doesn't have the he doesn't have Six's sort of sarcasm at this point. He's very honest with people, I guess would be the way to look at it.
He's honest. He's light. He's very young. I was surprised to see. I mean, especially looking at this and then Colony 3, he looks like he aged a lot in 4 years.
I think a big help is if your hair is curly and you cut it short enough to get rid of the curls, you look a lot younger. He like grew his hair out for later. Like it's not even like he's got long hair, but he's got curls going on the side of his head.
Yeah.
So he's sort of like very clean cut in the pilot.
Yeah.
The main problem with the pilot is that it's 25 minutes and you've got this plot to uncover. So it's really just him sort of rapid fire going from point A to point B, saying like someone will be like, here's a clue, and he'll go, okay. And then he goes there and someone will say, here's a clue, and he'll go over there and do that.
Yeah.
And I was certainly not drawn in mm-hmm. by the show. I feel like it's the kind of show that just like passes in front of you as you're watching it.
That's interesting. Because I actually, when I first watched this series, I think the speed and the shortness is actually what drew me in.
Yes.
Because I think they do a lot in 25 minutes.
They do, yeah.
And what I really like about it, and what I actually think works surprisingly well for me anyway, I think there's a couple logic leaps if you really want to break down the plot of what happens.
Yep.
Which is basically, it actually makes it easy to talk about, because what I liked about this half-hour format is it's quick, it's tight, and I thought it was well written. And you kind of get in and you get out, and I didn't feel like it was an unsatisfying show.
Right.
The plot of this episode is basically you have a cold open where two guys are roughing up this third guy trying to find out where this gold is, and they accidentally kill him. And after they kill him, they realize that someone has witnessed the death of this person.
Yep.
And they then need to try and figure out who this person is. And, you know, after they find out someone has been there, but is now, you know, run away, that's when the credits come in. And the rest of the episode is Drake trying to figure out who killed this person, and then, well, when he finds out there's gold involved, well, what happened to the gold?
Right.
And, you know, it's a pretty standard spy plot.
Yep.
But I think it's done well. I think I like how tight it is. There's enough happening that I thought it was interesting the entire way through.
Yep, yep. The brevity certainly helps. I mean, it'd be interesting to like remake the hour sort of like standard format into a short 25 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I'll have more points, I think, once we finish the summary of the others, because I don't want to ruin how it changes. But it's like he's sort of. The early one is weird to me because, as like we were talking about James Bond before, it made me kind of realize that spy thrillers kind of need a hook to them.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I don't know if it's just because I'm familiar with Bond, but like, if you take Bond and you strip away the women and like a ton of the gadgets and stuff, I'm not sure what you're really left with at that point. And you're like, I feel like this needs something, because this is just a guy sort of cordially walking around, not doing anything. Like, I'm not blown away by his detective work. He does a solid job. He gets all the answers he needs and everything. But it's really sort of, I guess, what's that word? Milquetoast. It's like, I was just like, oh, okay, this is This is like if I just wrote a script and I wanted to like suss it out later. Be like, I'll add this guy with like a crazy thing later on, but this will be the bare bones minimum.
Right.
I kind of feel like that's what this episode was.
Yeah, I can see that. And as if you continue to watch the first series, you do start to get more interesting things that end up becoming tropes of the spy genre. Like there's one episode where he has to go behind enemy lines, and I can't remember exactly the main story, but it involves him having to send radio reports back to, you know, NATO, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it involves him having to... He's going out for a picnic, and all of the pieces of this radio are built into the picnic basket.
Oh, sure.
And, like, yep, the antenna is inside a loaf of bread and all that kind of stuff. And so, you know, it gets interesting as...
Right.
But as a way of laying down a core concept, I thought it was pretty good.
Yep.
It was at the time I watched it, it was interesting enough. You know, the thing that really drew me to the show, and I don't think it stood out to me as much from The Prisoner, the first time I watched The Prisoner, but what really stood out to me from Danger Man and Secret Agent is the fact that he doesn't really use weapons.
Yep.
That's
if you're going to make a case of this is number six, his non-use of weapons is certain, like his flailing fighting style is kind of like if you imagined someone dancing or something, you're just like, that's that person, that's the way they dance. Like, well, he fights in a very certain manner.
One of the things that McGoohan took very seriously was, as I said, this inclusion of violence. So every fight scene needed to be scripted first.
Okay.
And approved by McGoohan. And then he made sure that they were all very tightly choreographed, and he did all the fights.
Yep.
As I was watching the first episode, there is, you know, as these shows do, as we found out, at the end there is a
gratuitous ass beating.
And there are many gratuitous ass beatings across all of these episodes.
Yeah.
But the way they were shooting it was kind of far away and dark. And I was like, well, I don't really know if... I mean, I can't tell if that's McGoohan because of the way they shot it. But then it occurred to me, I think they're doing that to hide the other guy's stunt double.
Oh.
Because there's a few times where they... I mean, the movements are definitely him. Definitely Patrick McGoohan.
Yeah, I mean, knowing him move... Is that the fight scene where the... I think it was the...
At the very end when they're...
In the room?
Yeah, where like it starts with him hitting the gun out of the guy's hand with the door.
Right. And I think it's like the... His stunt double, the other guy's stunt double, took like the hardest fall I've seen. He does like this, like hip toss to him at a certain point, and maybe through a table. I don't remember, but the stunt double certainly fell hard on that one. So, impressed with his ability, but he does have that sort of spastic fighting style that would become his trademark.
I can't remember if it's in this one or Colony 3, but you get to see some of that number six run too.
Yeah,
that, like kind of falling, but kind of T-Rex arm run.
Yeah.
But yeah, it drew me in because of the fact that he doesn't use guns. The same thing happened when I started watching Doctor Who. That aspect of the character, the fact that he's actually outthinking a lot of these villains and a lot of these antagonists, really attracted me because it's so rare.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got every show on television, someone's got a gun, and the ones that they don't have guns, it's like, They're not really using their brains to figure out or outsmart anybody. I am huge into comic books, and one of the things I can't stand about comic books and comic book movies is when the climax of any particular story, the hero wins because he punches harder than the bad guy.
Yep.
Like, for instance, there's a Superman story from a few years ago that in the comics that did. You know, it's very highly regarded, and it's this Superman versus Brainiac thing. And I'm like, oh, okay. So Superman, I think, doesn't get a lot of credit because he's, you know, he's got all the powers, right? You know,
yep.
How do you beat Superman?
Right.
So in this situation, I was thinking, oh, well, he's fighting Brainiac. Hopefully, the way he wins is he has to outsmart Brainiac.
Sure.
And they get into a fight, and he starts punching Superman. And at one point, Superman just, like, grits his teeth, steals himself and punches harder than Brainiac, and that's how the story ends. But that's how he defeats him. And I was like, "You got to be kidding me!
Yeah.
If your character is this strong, you have to figure out different, interesting things to do." And
right.
It's just the same with The Dark Knight Rises, the Batman movie. The fact that Batman just punches harder than Bane, and that's how he beats Bane, just really bummed the hell out of me. Especially that, you know, I could go into a whole rant on that, but that's a different podcast. We'll be covering that on The Dark Knight Rises.
No, that's podcast. Yeah, that's true. It's a, it does come down to that in a certain way. Like, the character goes through a time of like emotional growth. Like in Rises, it's like he, you know, he learns what it takes to overcome this, and then at the end, it's just like,
yeah, I'm like, gonna punch you now.
Yeah, I mean, you could take him out. You didn't have to do any of that other crap,
right? You know, yeah, he could have just done some push-ups and got back to him.
Anyway, but so the fact that the hero or the main character is actually thinking and is actually being clever is was really refreshing.
Yeah. Yep.
I've been here before.
When, Signor?
Well, I don't know, but I know the view, the tower over there, the group of houses, the mountain.
I've lived here all my life. I do not remember you.
It's extraordinary. I don't...
Another main reason. Oh, also another Bond connection. Well, as we get into this next part, one of the reasons I selected this episode was because this episode takes place, quote unquote, in Rome.
Right.
The second half. Drake learns by connecting the girlfriend of the guy who died to a painting of a Italian villa, which then he leads him to this Italian villa in Rome.
Yep.
And Rome, the city double for Rome is Port Marion.
Yep.
Is the village. And this was the first time that McGoohan had worked in the village. They ended up doing 4 episodes of this original run that took place there. But clearly something clicked with him, and it stuck with him, and he ended up using it for the village and the prisoner. And you know, you can see why. I mean, if you didn't recognize this place from the prisoner, or at least I know if I didn't recognize it from the prisoner, I wouldn't have even realized it was in England.
Right. Yeah.
You know. It's very different looking, and it lends itself well to a global show like this.
Yep, yep.
And the scene where he pulls in to this village, he is driving an Aston Martin.
Sure.
Which obviously becomes a mainstay of James Bond.
Yep.
But yeah, so overall, John Drake, as he appears in this episode.
Yep.
Would you say that this John Drake is number 6?
No, I'd say he's not number 6.
Yeah, I would say he's not either.
Yeah.
He's too light. He's too he's American.
He's American is the problem, and he's just friendly with everyone. He has no sort of cynical edge that is typically number 6. Or not being sort of sarcastic to people. He's very earnest the entire episode about what's going on, and like pleasantly smiley with the women and everything like that. Right. Like, it's just kind of
he's charming enough that when he gets to the village, he talks to he's trying to find this woman who painted the painting, and he finds her house and talks to her maid.
Yes.
And he's charming enough that he's like, oh, she's not here. Is it okay if I just hang out and wait till she gets here?
It was a different time.
Yeah, and I mean, it's like some stranger drives in claiming to be friends with this woman, and all of a sudden it's like, yeah, you know, she's not going to be here for a few hours. I don't know who you are, but yeah, just, you know, sit down.
Just hang out.
You know, put on her robe if you want, go through her drawers. It'll be fine.
He's a friendly guy. He's got a nice face, as they say. He's got a good, trusting face.
Yeah.
Yeah, Did you watch this before or after The Prisoner? You watched this after The Prisoner?
I watched this after The Prisoner.
Okay. Yeah, I think it might just be a weird thing of 60s television. It all sort of seems to just happen in front of me.
Yeah.
And I have a hard time sort of latching onto a lot of things that go on. I did just feel my main takeaway was that he was just a Bond that was stripped of things.
Mm-hmm.
And that made it somewhat less appealing to me for mm-hmm. some reason. I kind of like I needed a little something more, I think. I didn't feel the stakes were super high in that one. Eventually a guy comes in with a gun and threatens him, and that's about it. But it's there wasn't like, it didn't have the sort of unsettling thing that the next episode we watched had. It didn't have sort of the fish out of water that Kuroshi had.
Right.
So I was just like, oh, because he seemed perfectly comfortable in Rome. He's
right,
we're given the opinion that he's like a man of the world, like a Renaissance man of the world who exactly. can't be put out anywhere.
Yeah, and it also it wraps up a little too quickly. Like there's no room for any breathing. At
right.
the end.
Yeah.
It's like
it just cuts to black. It's just, he's like, yeah. well, that's it. Boom, and then it's done. And the credits roll.
The bad guy gets shot by the girl.
Yeah.
Well, the bad guy pulls a gets Drake dead to rights. But then the girl that he's after ends up shooting the guy who has the gun, and he makes it a point to say that he's going to live. Yep. And he'll be fine. But then he, what does he say? He says, he'll live. Now I suggest you do the same, or something like that. And that's just it. Yeah. Like, there's no, like, you don't even find out what happened to the gold.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah. You don't.
It's not really a wrap up to the story.
It does feel like it'd be a two part. That's because I watched it on YouTube.
Yeah.
And I texted you when I was watching. It's like, is this the full? The title claims it's a full episode. This is only 25 minutes, though. I don't understand.
Yeah.
And then it just cuts out. And it's like, I feel like I should be looking for part two on YouTube at this point, but no, that's just the way it is.
I mean, I like that there's a little bit of inferring you have to do in terms of how the characters are related.
Yeah.
But yeah, as far as wrap-ups go, it doesn't really tell you how the story really ends.
And a slightly crazy plot twist where the sketch guy in the restaurant was like, no, she drew me. That felt weird.
Yeah,
felt very
that's you know, I liked it because it is so weird, but it is also like a one in a million. Like if he didn't find that out, he never would have found it.
Right, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Because she didn't paint the painting, or did she? Is that her
she
painting?
Did, yes.
Okay, so that makes sense. She would draw. It's still a little. Yeah, it was just struck me as someone at a restaurant would be like, you know what, guy interrupting my dinner, I'll draw you instead. That'll
yeah,
be good.
And, you know, that leads to a really nice beat where he recognizes the signature on the drawing.
Yeah.
Then he links that to a signature on a painting in the dead guy's house,
yeah.
which he then brings with him to the dead guy's wife and just kind of like, you know, puts it down to see how people react. And the guy who ends up being the killer, you know, has that moment of where he kind of like tenses up when he sees the painting stuff.
Yeah.
And so it's that kind of cat and mouse stuff that I enjoy about it.
That guy does not do a good job of hiding his showing his poker face when he pulls that thing. And then they had to cut a McGoohan just like staring at him with a weird smile on his face.
That's one of those TV things where it's like you have to assume that any reaction done in close up is something done inside the person's head.
Yeah, they're not.
Otherwise, you're like, well, he just saw you gasp as though you saw a ghost.
Well,
he's gonna put two and two together
as he mouths, "He's got me." He's like, oh.
Yeah, but, half hour Danger Man. I enjoy it. It's tight. It's good. You know, not a lot of room for character development, but McGoohan elevates it. He's just so good.
Mm-hmm.
He's bright. I hesitate to say he's bright in like.
I mean, his aura, like his
yeah, not like
his shit was orange.
I mean, he is smart, but he's like his acting style is bright.
Yep.
And yeah, he really makes it work. It's a shame it didn't catch on, but. It doesn't really matter because, as I said, 1964, the show had been off the air for about 2 years, or maybe two and a half, 3 years. They bring it back as Secret Agent. Same character, only this time he is British.
Yep.
And he
and
works
twice as much of him.
Yeah. It's twice as much, hour long, works for a company called M9. So the episode I chose to look at from the second series is called Colony 3.
Hamden is an induction center for our intelligence agents. They come here to acclimatize themselves before being sent to work overseas.
In plain English, it's a school for spies.
And you think that there are no spy schools in Britain?
So, this one starts off pretty interesting because the cold opening is almost like a Star Trek kind of cold opening where you don't really know what the hell it means for anything.
Sure.
Whereas the first series is so short that your cold opening needs to basically tell you what's going on.
Yeah, what's happening.
Set everything up.
Yep.
The cold opening of Colony 3 is just a guy walking into like an assessment bureau or something, or a citizen's advice bureau.
Yep.
And that's like it. All it is like a door shuts and you see the name of the citizen's advice bureau and then they kick into the theme song. Which, if you are watching it in England, sounds like this.
Yeah.
And if you were watching it in America, sounds like this.
Secret agent man, secret agent man. They've given you a number and taken away your name.
I don't really know which one I like better. I thought I liked the secret agent man theme better.
I'll have to give them a listen again.
Yeah.
You can post in. I like the first one better. I like the second one better.
I'll cut those in as I see fit. Yeah, they both have their charm. But yeah, the biggest change is this show when it came back is reactive, and I don't know why they felt the need to make Drake British other than it's completely reactive to James Bond.
Was the production always British?
Yeah.
Just sold to an American?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Maybe. Yeah. Well, you said the Americans didn't buy into the first season all that much.
Yeah. Yeah. It didn't make it past the first series.
I'd assume that would kind of be a meeting where the first series, you'll be like, America's a bigger market. We'll make him American.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they sort of reject it or it's not as popular as you thought, you'd be like, well, to hell with it. Well, Britain seems to buying into this more. We'll make him more British.
I lean towards it's reactive to Bond just because not only is he British, but it's also he works for M9, which is...
Right.
I guess in the same warehouse as MI6.
Yeah, same wing of
different
the building. Wouldn't you think you'd think they'd want to just mimic Bond's success at that point? Just be like,
so
he's another British agent.
Yeah, I think it was like, oh, the James Bond craze is here. Everybody who's loves the British secret agent thing.
Yeah.
Here's something similar but different.
Was there ever a successful American Bond type character? Is there can I not think of
the very first televised production of Casino Royale featured an American James Bond named Jimmy Bond.
Oh, really? Yes, Jimmy Bond?
Yeah, it's real bad.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, you lose a lot when that guy becomes Jimmy Bond.
Yes, you do. I don't know. Well, actually, it's funny you should say that because I have some thoughts about if you were to remake The Prisoner, I think there was a natural person to choose for that, but we can get to that towards the end.
Yeah,
because it kind of
it's not Jimmy Bond.
It's not Jimmy Bond.
Okay.
It kind of ties into what you're asking if there was a successful American James Bond.
Okay.
So yeah, this episode is called Colony 3, and it's not directly. There's nothing in it that ties itself to The Prisoner. Well, the director of the episode is actually Don Chaffee.
Yep.
Who was a vet of directing The Prisoner.
Sure.
And there's nothing directly that ties it to The Prisoner, but the themes and the whole vibe of the episode is very similar to how The Prisoner was. This episode, Drake has to take the place of someone who works for this Citizens Advice Bureau who is defecting to go to a town called Hamden.
Yep.
Which is a secret town where they don't say Russians in the show.
No, do they only say Soviet?
They only say the word communist once.
Oh, okay.
They always refer to as the party.
Yes.
And they don't reference any other specific nationality or country.
Sure.
But the Russians.
Yep.
Where it's a town where the Russians send their homegrown spies to become integrated into English culture.
Yes.
To the point where when you meet them, you cannot tell that they are Russian.
Yeah, they're like proto-Americans, the FX series,
yeah,
where they've trained them to become American
as
citizens.
As I was watching, because I just started watching that show too, I was like, oh, I wonder if this is a
similar idea, yeah. Yep.
It's kind of cool. But yeah, it's a really cool idea. So Drake ends up with these two other people who are also going to this place, and they show up in this crazy place.
He's pretending to be somebody else.
Yes, he's pretending to be this person from the cold opening.
That they caught.
Yeah. And works at the Citizens Advice Bureau. And he's basically just there to see what this place is and take some photos and then get out. There's actually not a ton of action here.
No.
But I found this episode really interesting. I think it's really great.
Yeah, it's better than the first one, just because the concept is a little bit bigger, which is helpful. it's a proto-prisoner type idea where you're going to separate people. Like, you're kind of creating your own little town to change people.
Yep.
So I think he probably obviously liked that idea. A lot of it is kind of him just walking around the town, looking at the various things that are going on.
Which they actually do refer to as the village.
Yeah, they do call it a village a couple of times. And yeah, it's certainly a whole Cold War type thing with the British Five or whatever, the Cambridge Five, those spies were called. So it's certainly drawn from that kind of reality, which probably feels a little bit disconnected. At this point, it probably feels more science fiction than it was, kind of.
Yeah, I think so. I think what they're doing in this episode is probably similar to anything you'd see now about, like, sleeper cells of terrorists.
Yeah. It probably seems unrealistic in hindsight, but while you're in it, you're like, well, it's just kind of a light exaggeration, I guess, of what would be possible.
Yeah. And I think they do a really good job. I think the longer episode gives them more time for setting a mood.
Yep.
And doing some really interesting things. They have a brainwash. Well, I guess it's not really brainwashing, but it's like an interrogation scene that's really intense.
Electric chair.
Yeah, an electric chair with, you know, big bright lights and stuff. And it's, you know, you get more traditional spy stuff in this one.
Yes.
Where Drake is put in charge of basically like renewing passports or something.
Yeah, he has a desk job. People just come in and talk to him.
And he has a typewriter that he's brought with him, and inside of all of his pencils are hidden little rolls of microfilm, which go into a camera, which goes into the typewriter, which every time he hits the, I think it was the semicolon button.
Yep.
You know, the return bell clings, which covers the sound of the camera snapping the picture of whoever's sitting in front of the desk. Which is, you know, it's just a really nice a nice touch.
Yeah, yep.
And the weird thing about this story is Drake is actually completely successful. He goes to this place where you know, one of the big lines spoken by one of the main antagonists that is also a theme and a sense of atmosphere that carries over into The Prisoner is once people enter Colony 3, they cease to exist. And clearly that carried over into The Prisoner. But Drake manages to get to this place where, in the middle of nowhere, he has no idea where it is, take pictures of all these people who are being trained as double agents.
Although the train goes there, right? Which is kind of funny.
Yeah, the train goes to an extent, and then they have to transfer into a bus.
Oh, they took them. Did they?
Yeah, because they show up to the town in a double-decker bus.
Oh, that's right. That's
like
right.
Which is like a nice bit of surrealism where they're driving this, you know, English London, downtown London double-decker bus.
That's right. I
through like
thing.
Basically a marsh.
Yep.
You know, until they come to this town that just pops up in the middle of nowhere.
Okay, that's right. Yeah.
But yeah, Drake actually, he is successful in taking pictures of all of these, you know, like, I think there was like 50 or something people he got pictures of.
Yep.
Then he manages to, using another gadget, which was a radio that was built into his electric razor.
Right. Oh, I'm getting my gadgets confused. Yes, he uses that one.
He uses that to contact M9, and they get him out of there.
Yep.
Well, I guess they do send, the village does send someone after him to take him out, which, of course, there's another gratuitous ass beating.
The scene on the train.
When he throws
Mama from the train.
Drake is, unfortunately, has to kill this guy and throws him off the train.
Yep.
And makes it back. And the last scene is that him going through all the pictures of these people that he's taken. And M9, the guy who, whoever his higher up, is being like, well, that's great. I mean, whenever these guys show up, we'll be sure to grab them. Nice work. Nice.
You say there were 86 of these students?
Including Richardson.
Mm-hmm. If there's only 59 photographs. Well, we'll nab these fellas when they turn up for duty.
Nothing we can do about the girl, I suppose.
Of course not. We've never even heard of her.
But it's like the atmosphere of the episode that I think is really really interesting, and they do it really well.
Yeah, no, it's yeah, it's all sort of concept at that point. You know, it's like you say, everything resolves very quickly or very sort of neatly, and then there's no big deal after that. But it's very, the concept is interesting, and it certainly had to have influenced something of the prisoner. Yeah. The idea of that.
I forgot to mention this when I mentioned the theme song, but one of the lines from the theme song is like, this just adds to everything confusing with a connection.
Mm-hmm.
Is one of the lines in the chorus of Secret Agent Man is, they're giving you a number and taking away your name.
Yep.
Which, you know, if I need to explain that to anyone who's listening, then you're listening to the wrong show.
This is not ESPN's basketball podcast.
But yeah, it definitely, that whole vibe definitely struck a chord with him.
Yep.
And what about his acting style? How do you think he's different in this? Because he's a lot different than he was in the very first episode.
He is. He's a middle ground between Six and the original John Drake.
Yeah.
Young John Drake, yeah. I guess, or whatever you call him. He's starting to get his little sassy retorts going. That's kind of his... he's starting to get into that. He's not fully in that mode at this point, but he's starting to get a little bit more snappy. He kind of has the older John Drake's thing of being potentially overpowered, mm-hmm. at times, like when he's in the chair. He kind of does that. Like that was not a very Six way to act, I think.
No, I that's one of the things I really like about him is like you're saying, John Drake is never... where James Bond, you never have any doubt that James Bond is going to succeed.
Yeah.
You never get that feeling with Drake. Drake is very much a regular guy.
Yeah. Yep.
And McGoohan is such a good actor that he can play that really well. I think it's a little tough when you get an episode like this, because even though it's slight, Drake is still playing a character.
Yeah.
You know, he's not playing the secret agent. He's playing the way a secret agent would, which is, you know, not James Bond. And
right.
Just, you know,
yep.
He's not showing up to hand and being like, hi, my name's John Drake. I'm a secret agent. I'd like some drinks, please.
Right.
he's playing, he's standing in for this guy that we met in the cold open.
That's true, yeah.
But I definitely think, I think you're right. There is definitely a middle ground there where he's a lot more cynical, a lot darker.
Yep.
Than he was in the first episode. But he's not number Six yet.
Right, yeah.
Do you think that this John Drake is number Six?
This could be a young number Six.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could start to see it. If you'd only showed me this one, I would say it's more a acting range thing or a lack of acting range. I'd be like, oh, McGoohan just plays everybody sort of like this.
Yeah.
But since we've seen him not act like that, like Living in Harmony, and then super young John Drake, where they're totally different, I'd say it has potential.
Yeah. And one of the things that, you know, that you can cross between these characters is the way he approaches women and the way he deals with women.
Yep.
And in this episode, there is a female lead who I don't know if I would say he develops feelings for her, but he definitely has a soft spot for women.
Yes.
Whereas Six is so jaded and so cynical that, I mean, he kind of has a soft spot for women, but not really. He doesn't trust anybody enough to really... I mean, he's got a soft spot for the girl in Schizoid Man, Allison, the mind reader.
Yeah.
But aside from that, they pull that stupid trick on him in It's Your Funeral, where they have the girl pass out, and they're like, he can't resist a woman in distress.
Yeah, which felt out. Yeah, felt out of.
Yeah, I mean, if you watch him, it's like he can resist anything.
10 episodes of him screaming at women, and then they pull that on him. But yeah, he's I guess he has a soft. I mean, he's sort of kind in this one. They have that weird sort of bus farewell type thing.
The like, woman slips him a note to give to her mother, which he then gives up right away because he's still undercover.
Yeah,
and he doesn't want to get
outed as
So he gives the letter to the guy who's escorting him back. But I think it's interesting because it's I know that McGoohan is notoriously everyone's like, oh, he wouldn't play love scenes, you know, this, you know, because he's so conservative.
Yeah,
which may or may not be true. But I think that in both situations, Drake and Six, I think it's the right choice. McGoohan has a quote where he says, "When the character logically indulges in torrid scenes, then I'll play them. I do not believe for one moment, though, that Drake would chase any of the girls he meets. His life is too full of risks, too insecure, too roving for Drake to ever fall in love." And I think that makes a ton of sense.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's a polar opposite change from Bond, which makes him different. But I think it's a realistic change too.
Yes, I think the problem is that you kind of have to temper that with he should have desire to not be in his job. Like that's how you kind of like flesh out a character. Like if the job is number one to him. He should have feelings for people occasionally and then just be like, I can't, like, I have to walk away.
Yeah.
Like the De Niro character in Heat. Like, he has to be like, anything I can't drop is, like, nothing that I can pursue.
Yeah.
Instead, he's just sort of against it, like, Six especially. Drake, I only watched a couple episodes, so I can't tell if it becomes, like, a running theme. It is for Six. Because I didn't feel in these episodes he needed to fall in love with those women.
No, not at all.
So... I would only have a problem if in a future episode there was like, it was like, oh, he should like have feelings for her and nothing developed. And
yeah,
it's weird.
I haven't watched all 47 of the
second
middle section.
Yeah.
But I do believe that there are episodes in which he does have some sort of relationship, but I don't think it ever goes that far.
Right. Yeah.
I could be wrong. If anybody knows who's more fluent in the show than I am,
episode number and production code, please tell me the minutes on the DVD.
But yeah, so this episode was, I think, a pretty representative of the middle sequence, of Danger Man. And, most of the information I got about this show, I got from a website called danger/man.co.uk, which seems to, I don't know if it's an official site, but it looks pretty good. and in this, they talk about, you know, the Six versus Drake thing.
When you click on, that website, you go, I want information.
If only, man. There's a dead zone for a great prisoner website out there that doesn't exist, or maybe it does exist and we just don't know.
Yeah, I just can't find it.
Maybe if we find it, it's already too late.
That would be.
But in his assessment of Danger Man, especially this middle series, he talks about how Drake has become more cynical, and as the show goes on, they start to make. The episodes start to get darker, and they start to be. Have some focus on, you know, they're not all happy ending. I mean, even this one, this doesn't have a quote unquote happy ending because
he just finishes the job.
He finishes his job and he asks about whether or not they can get the girl out there. And his boss says, I don't know what you're talking about. As far as we know, she doesn't exist.
Yeah.
And you know, I think it's a good ending. It's definitely, it has the same sort of tone I think they were going for in the half an hour shows. At least from that first one, where it's kind of like,
it feels a little cooler or something. He's a little bit, it's a little bit more passive. I don't know if passive is the right word. He's a little bit more detached in the second one.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I guess it is. It's darker. It's more cynical.
Yeah.
The person who writes for DangerMan.co.uk actually says, if you think that Drake is Six and you want to find some episodes that might show why he resigned, he gives a list that are particularly dark episodes.
These are all Danger Man episodes?
Yeah, these are all Danger Man episodes. I haven't seen any of them because most of them, at least I don't think I have. But if you're interested, they are Judgment Day, Are You Going to Be More Permanent?
Why I Resigned.
Why I Resigned. My Letter as TV. All of the things... No, sorry. The episodes are Judgment Day, Are You Going to Be More Permanent, The Outcast, To Our Best Friend, The Man Who Wouldn't Talk, and The Man on the Beach. I think this is the last one he mentions specifically as one where I think Drake's friend is killed in the line of duty, and it's just a very dark episode for Drake.
Okay.
Which, you know, like I love finding, you know, ways to connect them, and if you want to, and it's very interesting.
Yep.
But I think I would agree with you. I wouldn't go on a limb and say this Drake is six.
Right.
Because, like you said, I think he's a middle ground, but I just think McGoohan is playing him different.
Yes.
He's got some of that cynical nature, but it's just... Six is so... I mean, it's. I guess it's. You could say it's a matter of the condition that he's in, but six is so much more... I hate to say one note, but Drake has a lot more room to maneuver.
Well, six can... Yeah, it's also because we only see six in the village setting.
Yeah.
So it's hard to say like how he'd react, but yeah, six's only mode is defiant... sarcasm, sort of. Like, that's his response. Yeah. That's his baseline response to everything.
Yeah.
And Drake's a bit more mellow. He's more of a taking information type.
Right.
And six is fuck your information, basically. Like, I'll do what I want.
Yeah, yeah. And he, I mean, it's not exactly like there's a lot of opportunities for six to go undercover in disguise.
Right, yeah. Unless, that's kind of the problem.
Unless you're in the girl who was death, in which he dresses like Sherlock Holmes for the entire episode. But we can get to that later, too.
Akko Nakamura, our principal representative in Tokyo, was, to say the least of it, interrupted during a broadcast. What do you know about that?
She died of a heart attack.
Did she? Potter, the girl's last message was graded priority one. You know what that classification means. What else do you know?
Nothing, old boy. She was your department, not ours. I see. What did she report before she died?
That's my department.
Well, understood.
At this point in the series, after 47 episodes of Danger Man, McGoohan's getting burnt out. He thinks they're repeating themselves, so he decides he wants to leave. So the last two episodes they do, like I said, Kuroshi and Shindashima, are in color, and they both take place in Japan. And they both involve Drake investigating... this, it's called like the Brotherhood of Blood or something. It's a very occult yeah. seeming,
a lot of robes.
Yeah, a lot of robes. Occult evil practicing guys that don't really have a discernible thing they're doing.
Yeah,
it's just sort of like evil for evil's sake.
I had trouble tracking Kuroshi. What the hell was going on the entire episode, and then it just ended with dudes in robes, and it was like, oh, that was odd. And you know what, to me it felt like number six stars in Lost in Translation. It was like it was so bizarre.
Yeah,
that it's like he's in Japan, he's not really doing anything.
No,
he's just kind of hanging out there, and he doesn't say a lot, and it's just, it reminds me of just Bill Murray just sitting in a hotel room, and it's like, wow, this is odd.
Yeah,
this is something.
Yeah. Right off the bat, the connection we have to the prisoner from this episode is these two episodes, Kuroshi and Shindashima, both featured George Markstein as script editor.
Yeah, I noticed his name, yeah.
Yeah, who went on, obviously, to be co-creator of The Prisoner. But yeah, it's... you're right. It's the main plot across both of these episodes is John Drake in Japan against this weird occult group. Kuroshi is about him trying to solve the murder of one of M9's agents. And Shindashima is... Shindashima got really big really fast.
Yeah.
Because where Kuroshi is... it's very... The storyline is not super complex, which gives them a lot of opportunity to explore Japan.
Yes.
I should say Japan as it was created on a backlot in Britain.
Yeah. I had a hard time. I don't know if this is just modern, like our modern like way that people talk about this is being tainted, but I was like, I spent a lot of it as like, is this racist? I can't tell if this is racist. Like, I don't think it is, but
I don't know. So there's one character who is a very stereotypical old Japanese man.
Yep.
Who I didn't look up his name, so I don't know, but I'm about 80% sure he's not Japanese.
Okay.
I'm not 100% sure, but he does not seem Japanese. He seems like Breakfast at Tiffany's Mickey Rooney.
Okay. You know. Yep. Yep.
I could be wrong. I don't know. But if he, I'm just saying, if he is Japanese, he's not pulling it off.
He's not convincing me of his Japanese-ness. Interesting.
Yeah. And Shindashima is where Kuroshi is a lot of, like you said, lost in translation, where it's Drake just sort of absorbing Japan.
Yeah, yeah.
Shindashima,
drinking a lot of tea.
Yeah. Shindashima is Drake basically leading a revolution of villagers against the evil Brotherhood of Blood,
yeah,
who is running this island that they all live on.
Yeah.
And it ends with like a gigantic machine gun fight, and it's insane.
Yep.
But it's also really boring.
Yep.
Like, so across both of these episodes, I don't blame Magoon for leaving at all, because I thought both of these episodes were terrible.
Yep.
There's one sequence in Kuroshi that I thought was kind of interesting, which after Drake is brought to a kabuki theater where he is presented with probably the worst kabuki I've ever
seen.
Yeah,
it looked like a high school play kabuki. Yeah, it was like
bad.
It was like set pieces just laying around everywhere.
They're doing a kabuki version of Hamlet, and then after that I can't exactly remember why, but he's brought backstage like, do you want to meet the cast or the director or something?
Yep.
And he's led into this room where all of the kabuki costumes are, and they're all on mannequins and stuff, and obviously the setup is one of these mannequins is actually a person who, yes, then tries to
attack you when you,
yeah. But, you know, it's a rather cliche setup, but I actually thought it was pretty good.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was just the creepiness of those kabuki masks or what, but
yeah,
it was
probably just the setting for it. I'll always remember this one as the high point of action when he goes back to that woman's apartment,
yeah,
and he's like banging on the door for a few minutes, and then he uses his gadget to blow the, yeah, lock on the door. And
he
then
pulls, what is it? He pulls like his,
it's his watch or something, isn't it?
Yeah, or it's like a cufflink or something.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It's a tiny little circle.
A cufflink that he opens with a little tiny wire in it, and then he just sticks onto some plastic explosive, blows the shit out of the door.
But it's not a big explosion. It basically just pops the lock, so there's a little hole where like the doorknob would be in your door, and the thing, like, it's obviously just a grip stood on the end and hit with a hammer, and it like popped, yeah, out of the thing. And he runs in there, and that's when he does his six run. He like Tyrannosaurus Rexes,
yes,
in,
yep,
and he,
yep,
grabs flowers and throws them out the window,
and they all of a sudden they start smoking. like it's Batman 66. Well, I mean, obviously the reason that happens is because the M9 agent who's killed at the beginning is killed by flowers that spray deadly gas.
Gas, yeah.
And, yeah, whatever. yeah, it's just, it's not good. I mean, I appreciate the attempt to really kind of do something different and unique, but, I mean, I found it very boring. Shindashima, I almost shut off.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems so much, I couldn't, I think You Only Live Twice, the Bond movie where he goes to Japan.
Yep.
I think came out the following year.
Okay.
But I'm not, I mean, they may have been being made at the same time, I don't know. But if so, this also feels like responsive to Bond. Or maybe it predates it, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
But I couldn't watch Shindashima without thinking about that movie because it's so similar.
Oh, okay.
And it's just really boring. I mean, it was that episode specifically, and Kuroshi to a lesser extent, that really told me that, like, the thing that's really interesting about Danger Man is Drake and how he solves the problems and how he acts. Because he doesn't really do any interesting acting. Well, let me rephrase that. He doesn't put on a character the way he does in Colony 3.
Right.
Shindashima is basically like a beat by beat thing that, you know, it's like, all right, here we have the machine gun fight, and here we have the underwater knife fight, And then this is where you use your gadget, and it's just like there's nothing interesting about anything he's doing.
Right, yeah.
And it just, I just felt really flat, and I didn't like either one of them.
Yeah, he's, it's interesting. I always wonder what the scripts would look like. It's just like reading that script, you'd just be like, where's this going? I don't, what's happening? It's just, there's a lot of just scenes about nothing, nothing really getting you invested in. You know, Colony 3 at least had an interesting sort of subtext to it, I guess, if you'd want to call it. The other one is interesting just for the quick hit kind of detective or spy thing. This one, it felt like a foreign film attempting to be a spy thriller. Okay. And, like taking like a very indie or like artistic way on it. And it's just, it wasn't interesting.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, I didn't think about it that way. And I don't know if that, like, Brotherhood of Blood or whatever, I'm probably saying the wrong thing, but I don't know if they were supposed to be, like, an ongoing villain.
Yeah.
Because they're in these first two episodes of what was to be season four.
Yeah.
And that also seems like a very Bond thing to be like, well, now here's the Spectre.
Right. Group, yeah. Who's, yeah.
Although
who's...
a lot more just a cult base. It's just, I don't know, sacrificing people and shit.
Better robes.
Yeah. And, like, that too, it's, you know, Danger Man is very grounded. Even when you get to Colony 3, what they're doing doesn't. I mean, you said it seems like science fiction now.
Now, yeah.
But
yeah.
It doesn't really feel like
that crazy.
Yep. But once you get John Drake showing up in underground caves, where
an underground cave is like not a good is not a good look for things.
Someone, it's just like, come on, man. Or like I said, leading a revolution of peasants back to take over the island. It's just, they lost the narrative thread somewhere along there.
Yes, yeah.
But I mean, I don't know. After 90-something episodes, what else can
you have to
do?
Start, yeah, you have to start and, you know, getting, I mean, crazy.
It was a big moneymaker for ITV and Lou Grade, and they obviously wanted to keep going with it. But, you know, a credit for McGoohan for saying no. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, saying no and the fact that they wanted to keep him wanted to make sure they held on to his star is what got The Prisoner made.
Yep.
So, you know, thank you, shitty Danger Man, I guess. the other thing is, man, the color did not do it any favors. I thought, like, the sets just feel so much like sets. I think you can cover a lot in black and white.
You can, yeah.
And once it goes to color, it's just, it's like, that's clearly, you know, that's not Japan. That's not an airport, you know?
Right. Yeah, and it's also just black and white can still look sharp, where color at that point was, everything's very washed out. It's just, it's a very, let's say, like, sort of bleached feel to color stuff from that, because they couldn't get the colors sharp enough where they could get the blacks of black and white to look good.
Yeah.
So it's just very, I don't know how to describe it. It's just like this sort of like beach haze or something over everything. It just doesn't, it's not very appealing to look at.
There we are. Installation completed.
You would be more comfortable in one of our uniforms.
I am never comfortable in any uniform, thank you.
Unfortunately, you didn't watch Shin Dashima.
No.
You missed a great line by Drake, which So he gets to the island, and everybody on the island is wearing karate gis.
Sure. That's why just wouldn't,
like,
they?
Yeah. No, like, that's not like they're... I mean, they are all kind of karate guys, but... And they're all white guys. It's like a secret occult group made of white guys who take karate.
Sure. I love that Facebook group. it's kind of the... what the hell? The meditative number two, who had the gi.
Oh, yes. Yeah, maybe he's part of it.
Yeah, he probably is.
Another connection. Yep. Exactly. Yep. That's why that scene's in there. but when he gets there, the lead guy who's in his gi is like, can we get you some other clothes? It's like, why don't you wear this breathable karate gi? And his response is, I'm an electronics expert, not a karate king.
Wow. Who is the master of this dojo?
Oh, God.
Not a karate king.
And there was one good shot in it where he's going after the bad guy who's got this big desk, and they keep as he's Drake is getting closer to the room. They keep showing this guy behind the desk, and they're shooting it like very low,
sure,
like up over the desk. And as soon as Drake pops his head around the door, the same low shot on the desk breaks in half, and a giant machine gun comes out. It just starts going. It's like, all right, that was kind of good. That was kind of fun.
But that's very Bondy.
Yeah,
that's
the whole thing. It felt so James Bond, and it did not feel like Danger Man.
Okay, yeah.
But I have to ask, did this John Drake feel like number six?
Yeah. As I said, this was six in Lost in Translation. This is this is number six, just walking around.
Yeah, I agree. This his acting style in this is very, very similar to the way he plays number six.
Yep.
And I don't know if that's because there was nothing else for him to do. I don't know if it's because...
I wonder if he's getting so burnt out on this that his cynicism is now becoming part of his performance.
Yeah, I was thinking that
too. Where he's just like,
yeah,
I don't care about any of this. This is all ridiculous.
It's very possible.
And he still maintained that through The Prisoner. Like, he's still... Because he starts The Prisoner pretty soon after this, right? It's like the next year?
Yes.
So, I mean, production on that would have started pretty much after Danger Man ended.
Yeah, and I mean, Kuroshi and Shindashima started production 2 weeks after the final episode of the previous season. Of Danger
right,
Man.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
He'd been working, for I mean, this is what, 66? He'd been working nonstop, or maybe 67? No, I think it's 66. He'd been working nonstop for like 2.5 years.
It's the...
just doing Danger Man over and over and over again.
You know Island of Dr. Moreau, the remake?
Yeah.
The Kilmer?
Yes.
Well, it's commonly regarded as like one of the worst movies of all time. There's a documentary someone made. You can watch it on Amazon about the making of that movie.
Ooh, I'm going to have to watch it.
And it's interesting... But it's like everyone is just such dicks. But like Marlon Brando was in the dick phase of his career where I'm always curious about, I guess it's the executives love it because they know he'll get money. Like people will pay to see Brando. But it's actors like that. I never understand why anyone would want to work with them. You know, at a certain point, be like, I don't care about this guy. Get him out of here. But he's
only in it for like 10 minutes.
Yeah. He leaves an impression. But one of the actresses in the documentary who was there was just like, she wanted to talk to Marlon Brando, be like, maybe we could go over, you know, talk to this living legend. Like, you want to go over lines, like talk about what our characters are doing. And she said that to him. And his response was just like, don't worry about it. None of this makes any sense. We're both getting paid to say utter nonsense. Just let's have a good time and relax. And I feel like maybe that was McGoohan's attitude at a certain point of like, I'm just going to do this.
Yeah, I think it's... Yeah, I don't know if it's quite that, but I think he cared about the character enough where when it got to this thing where it's just like, this is not John Drake.
Yeah.
This is not the Danger Man. That, you know, I just think he just had enough of it. And it was like, you know, if we're going to... Because, I mean, he cared so much about how much violence was in it and what the fight scenes were like and all this kind of stuff. When you get to, you know, rooms full of karate guys and machine guns and, you know...
Watches with plastic or cufflinks.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's standard. But, like, you know, but, I mean, the end of Shindashima has all of these peasants leading, you know, leading a riot into the, like, volcano lair of this... Brotherhood of Blood and they're all getting killed and shit. And, and it's like, this is not what he had in mind, I don't think.
Right.
And so I totally understand why he quit. Interestingly enough, he decided to quit before they shot these.
Okay.
And Ralph Smart, the creator of the show, his name is not on either of these episodes. And no one's really sure why that is. There has been an apocryphal, or I should say, some belief that he didn't like the way that it was going with the character. But he also, there's a theory that when The Prisoner got picked up, they originally wanted to make it John Drake.
Sure.
To continue, obviously, the cash cow or whatever of Danger Man.
Yep.
And Ralph Smart didn't like that and didn't like the way they were going with it, so he chose to distance himself from the project, which a lot of people think this is why they don't, number six is not called John Drake. I don't believe that, but...
It gets into one of those things. It's like, could that have financial implications? If he doesn't want to give out the character or something, and then everyone is just like, ooh, we can't call it the same. Because then... another Star Trek thing, but you know, Star Trek Voyager, mm-hmm. there's the Tom Paris character. He's the blonde-haired guy. That actor played another character in a Wesley-centric episode, the episode where Wesley's in Starfleet and they do this thing and they kill some other cadet accidentally.
Oh, yeah, okay.
That character was supposed to be the other character from the Next Generation episode.
Oh, really?
Put into the Voyager series, so he'd have like backstory to him. And they didn't want to pay the royalties of having that character, because you have to pay the creators of that episode, of that character, the royalties. So they decided to just rename that actor as a different person.
Yeah.
So it gets into all that kind of weird stuff.
Yeah, I mean, that's what a lot of people think could have happened. I personally don't think so, just because, you know, they say, oh, there was probably a resulting schism between McGoohan and Ralph Smart.
Yep.
Which I also don't really believe, because the first person number six meets in the village is Ralph Smart's wife.
Oh, like his actress wife?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
And I think I don't know if that's entirely a giving the show a blessing, but it's like, I don't think that would have happened if there was any animosity.
Bad blood. Yeah. Yep. Yep.
I also don't think so, because I feel like the concept of that show is so clearly defined.
Yep.
That saying this is John Drake would take you out of it immediately.
Yeah. Well, it adds a backstory that is not particularly needed for what the prisoner is about.
It's not needed, and then you get into a lot of other things like...
you couldn't have that great episode with his fiance. Like, that would just be impossible to do.
Interestingly enough, the woman in Colony 3 is named Janet. Maybe that's his wife.
No,
I don't know.
It all worked out for him.
But, you know, then you get into other weird things like the really blonde number two from It's Your Funeral.
Nemet. What's his name?
Nesbitt.
Yeah.
Shows up in the second episode of Danger Man as an assassin.
Oh.
You know? And so it's like, well, I mean, do you really want to start getting into that quagmire of...
Britain's a small island. There's only so many people.
Yeah, I mean, that's why all these actors are in all the shows. Yeah. I personally think that it was never intended to. I mean, George Markstein, when asked, he said, "Of course it's supposed to be John Drake. Of course it is." McGoohan says no.
Right.
McGoohan says it was never intended to be John Drake. I read some quote that I don't know where the quote is from, but supposedly it claims. Supposedly it's a quote from McGoohan saying initially he intended someone else to play the character,
sure.
Which I don't entirely believe, but is another thing to say to distance the two. I feel like I think Lou Grade probably kept it intentionally gray.
Yep.
Or maybe even said it's a sequel to Danger Man just to keep people being
interested.
I mean, it's such a weird concept.
Yep.
You know, I think I've said this at some point before. But to have something like Danger Man, you know, with the same actor that you can firmly grasp onto as a jumping off point for this thing,
yep.
sure made it a ton easier to sell.
Yes.
You know? Yep. It's like if they were trying to sell Highlander and they were like, oh no, it's a sequel to James Bond, because Sean Connery's in it.
Right.
And it's just James Bond's actually an immortal. It's just watch it, it's fine.
It'll make sense.
Yeah, it'll make sense. But yeah, as I was saying at the beginning, I had a pretty staunch opinion about whether or not Six is actually Drake and vice versa. After all of this, what do you think?
I think he's more likely that Six is Drake.
Yeah.
Than less likely.
Okay. I think
I'd put it at like a 2/3 chance. That's supposed to be Drake.
Okay, well, let's do it this way. Keeping in line with our... I mean, we can't rate a plan in this, but on a scale of 1 to 6, is John Drake number 6?
It's a 4.
4?
Whereas 6 is... He is 6. It's a 4.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough, because I always was firmly believed no, just because I had watched the early Danger Man, and I had watched, you know, the middle seasons of a bunch of those. But I hadn't seen Kuroshi and Shindashima, where he's clearly the same style of acting.
Yep.
I would say, I honestly can't definitively. I'm going to have to be a dickhead and say a 3.
A 3, sure.
However, that being said, I would like to bring it back to what I said at the beginning of the show.
Okay.
In that people who care are going to be disappointed.
All right.
Because after all that is said, it does not matter.
Sure.
If you start trying to tie continuity into these two shows, you don't just have to figure out, oh, how is number 6 John Drake? You have to figure out, well, how is number 6 John Drake, but how is John Drake also an American who works for NATO?
Sure.
So there's lots of... if you're trying to get that specific in your connections, you're not going to find anything. You're just going to find more holes.
Yes. Your stitch work to get them together is going to look pretty ugly.
Right. And the entire basis of this claim is that... I mean, they, as we've seen in The Prisoner, as it gets further on, they make it more specific in that 6 was some sort of secret agent.
Yes.
But early on in the show, they're never... you don't know that. It's not going into the show. You don't know that he's a secret agent.
Yep. You're talking about Danger Man or Prisoner?
The Prisoner.
Okay, yeah.
You don't really find out that he's really like a secret agent until deep into the show. They never come out and say that.
Okay. They refer to the village as a place where people of importance would go or something like that. But, yeah, that doesn't mean anything.
He could be the treasurer or something.
Yep. CEO of
the point is Nisquit. The point is it doesn't matter because I don't think that Drake being 6 adds anything to The Prisoner, but I also think him not being 6 takes anything away. Because think The Prisoner...
I'd agree with that.
The Prisoner is so clearly defined in what it is.
Yes.
That what happens at the beginning of the first episode and what happens at the end of the last episode are all that matters.
Yep.
You know? And it's just one of those things where I think a lot of people want an answer to it, but there is no answer. It's clearly intentionally vague.
Yep.
Even though it's like I was saying about Ray Bradbury being told what Fahrenheit 451 is really about.
Sure.
It's McGoohan could say it's not Drake, it's not Drake, it's not Drake, and there's always going to be someone who says but I think it's Drake, even though he doesn't say it. He created the damn show.
Sure.
And everybody, like Mark Steen, thinks it's Drake. So even the people who created the show can't agree on it.
Right.
But yeah, I think in the end it doesn't really matter.
Yes. I think it's what you were saying. It's like if the prisoner looked... If knowing the prisoner was Drake changed anything,
It'd
be like, oh, that's somewhat important to know.
Mm-hmm.
But it really doesn't change anything at all. Kind of like... Besides the ugliness of trying to stitch it up together, him being Drake adds no backstory to The Prisoner that makes The Prisoner a different show if you looked at it in hindsight.
Right. And I also think, as we talked about in Do Not Forsake Me, Oh My Darling, I think knowing his backstory, even if the definitive backstory is this is John Drake, right, I think that takes away from 6 a little bit.
Yes.
Because you lose that, you know, archetypal symbolic character.
Yeah.
By giving him a name and giving him a background, and it just you've I don't know it just
no that's yeah that's what the prisoner themes overpower the narrative, where Danger Man is basically all narrative. There's not really much of a theme to there's sort of the Colony 3 is kind of like a Cold War thing, but the episodes we watched, they're much more straight ahead. I guess The Prisoner is just kind of like a sort of like higher take on symbolism and like theme than the character is, because 6 isn't particularly a deep character. He's not nuanced in what he does. He has this overriding reaction to the collectivism of the village, and that's like the point of him.
Right. Yeah. So, yep, that Kuroshi Shindashima was the end of Danger Man. There are a few other... as a way to, I think, try and keep McGoohan, just in case he decided he wanted to come back. There were some other scripts that were produced that were never made. One of which ended up as a script for a TV show called The Champions, which I've never heard of. Another one, quote-unquote, became The Girl Who Was Death, which we talked about, where I don't think it's a one-to-one became. I think it's kind of like based off of
this concept. Right.
And there are a few other ones that were never filmed that I don't think anyone knows anything about. But yeah, overall, do you have any thoughts about Danger Man as a show?
Probably not my kettle of fish.
Yeah.
I don't think I'd rewatch that series ever. I think it's a kind of a byproduct of an era gone by, maybe a little bit. Yeah. It's hitting that a little bit too old to have like modern sensibilities going into.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting jumping off point to The Prisoner, I think, more than anything. It maybe makes The Prisoner seem a little bit more, I don't want to say interesting. It's the only word that's coming to my head, though. It makes The Prisoner seem more unique, yes. I guess, would be the way to look at it. And that's about it.
Yeah, at first I thought it occurred to me. I was like, well, I mean, what would be another thing? There's only 17 episodes of the show. What else can we do? It's like, oh, it might be interesting to do a podcast about Danger Man. But then I thought about it. I was like, there's really not a lot to... You can't talk about it in depth the way that we... You know, it's going to get tired very quickly.
Yes.
That's why I think there's a lot of shows like that where, if we really think about it, can you really get a lot of conversation out of it? And I think I love Danger Man. I think it's great.
Yep.
I really enjoy watching it. I think 90% of it is McGoohan.
Yep.
I should maybe say like 80% of it. I think 20% of it is they do tell some really good stories, but he's just so good, and I love him as an actor. That he makes it very watchable for me.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't think we could ever talk about it to the point that we've been talking about The Prisoner.
No, probably not. It's weird when you since we've been doing the podcast thing, shows have to have a certain something to them, like a built-in sort of like the Trek thing has sort of like a cultural importance that makes it sort of easy to talk about, and and just the way they're made is very easy to sort of pick apart. The Prisoner is more what's concise. There's only 17 of them, and they're also different from each other enough where you can get into it. It would be kind of like doing, I'm not comparing this to Secret Agent to this, but like if you tried to do like a Law and Order podcast, I can't imagine what you would be talking about after a little while. You'd be like, "Well, that was weird."
Yeah, I think I don't know. I mean, that one even I could.
You'd have to get real meta real fast. You'd have to start going like, you couldn't talk about the plots anymore. You'd have to start getting into like, I wonder what that actor was doing. Like, why?
Yeah, I think you get in Law and Order. You get some instances where you can talk about themes and stuff like that.
Yes.
Maybe SVU more than regular Law and Order. But yeah, regular Law and Order is something that would be tough to do an episode-by-episode podcast on.
we will be trying.
Probably, we should probably announce that.
We're going to start with Criminal Intent, the best Law and Order.
Work our way backwards.
Starring, the... D'Onofrio character in Criminal Intent is actually the Kingpin in Daredevil.
Well, and also
prequel.
The Jeff Goldblum character on Criminal Intent is actually the guy from The Fly.
Oh, so, that makes sense.
Who is also the guy from Jurassic Park.
Yeah, go back and watch it, everyone. It'll make a lot more sense.
I mean, it's clearly all there. but yeah, I think the most interesting thing about Danger Man is, if it were me, if I were to recommend it, I would say watch The Prisoner. And if you like The Prisoner, go back and watch Danger Man. Because it's, again, another reason why I think people connect it is it's a way to get more Prisoner.
Sure.
But I think what you're really looking for is more McGoohan.
More McGoohan,
But if you like The Prisoner and you want to know where it came from, I would go back and watch Danger Man. It fascinates me specifically because it is kind of forgotten.
Yep.
And all of the stuff that came from it, I find very fascinating that nobody remembers it.
Yep.
Whether it's the Secret Agent Man song, the fact that The Prisoner was a direct result of the show, the ties to James Bond, the predating of James Bond, and the entire Secret Agent boom, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
I find it interesting that it's not more well-known.
Yes.
And it's a shame because it's a good show. I think it's very watchable. And like I said, Magoon's great. Now, what I said at the beginning about a remake of The Prisoner, I think they missed their opportunity to do a perfect...
Oh, this character beat. Yeah, okay.
A perfect actor choice that would have been almost a one-to-one...
To remake The Prisoner.
Yes.
Okay.
It would have been almost a one-to-one analog to taking Magoon from Danger Man and turning him into The Prisoner.
Yep.
Because you were asking, has America ever had a successful James Bond type character? And they have. And his name is Jack Bauer.
Yeah.
If they had remade The Prisoner with Kiefer Sutherland, I'm dead serious. If they remade the show in 2009.
Yep.
If in 2009 they had cast Kiefer Sutherland as number six, I think that would be the best casting choice they could have made.
Interesting.
Because it has the same connections to a secret agent type show.
Yep.
In 24. And I think Kiefer Sutherland has that same kind of intensity.
Yeah.
That, I mean, where Jim Caviezel, as we'll find out when we cover the remake, is just like a dead fish. Man.
Just too passive, yeah.
Yeah. Kiefer Sutherland is all, Jack Bauer is all about just getting in people's faces, you know? I think that would have been a perfect casting choice.
Hmm.
The only thing that I can say about I'm disappointed that they didn't remake The Prisoner differently is that they didn't choose Kiefer Sutherland. I think he would have been fantastic.
Interesting. I'll have to think of my own, see if I can come up with an option. Yeah, Kiefer's a good one. Certainly 24 would have had the impact.
Yeah.
Same kind of idea, same kind of strangeness, and he is the right energy level, I guess, that you'd be looking for in that actor or that character.
So I will be writing some fan fiction with Kiefer Sutherland as number six. Hopefully, fingers crossed, I'm trying to get in touch with the publicist that he'll do the book on tape.
This is exactly what the mass market media is looking for.
This is the whole point of this podcast, is so I can get my Kiefer Sutherland as number six manifesto out there.
It's important.
But yeah, that's pretty much it. We thought it would be cool to take a breather before we get into the finale, which we'll be starting next week with the first half. Once Upon a Time. And I hope you enjoyed this. If you've never watched Danger Man, I hope this encourages you to go out and find it on YouTube.
They're all on YouTube. Yeah,
find them all on YouTube.
Everyone who could have been making money off this on YouTube is dead, so it's allowed to live on YouTube.
I think Danger Man would be a cool show to remake. I think that character would be an interesting, given how many spies there are on TV that are all the same thing.
I think it'd be interesting. I think you'd have problems with it because if you did a faithful remake of it, I think people would be like, what the hell? Like, he needs to do something.
Okay.
I feel he's of an era.
Okay. Yeah. I see what you mean. Yeah. I mean,
I can see that era of television. I can see the writers coming from radio.
Okay.
It's like the stories are not.
What would you say to like a Netflix thing? So like an eight episodes of Danger Man. Where it's more, you can spend more time on it and do something a little bit more cinematic.
Yeah, you could do something like that.
Yeah,
I think he'd need to have something amped up a little bit.
Okay,
that would be my one thing.
Yeah, yeah, I would agree with that. But yeah, I hope you enjoyed it. I hope it. If you haven't watched Danger Man, it encourages you to go do it because it's a fun show. And if you like Magoon, it's there's a lot of good Magoon in it.
Yep, so. It's all out there.
So yeah, thanks for coming back, and we will see you next time. Oh, wait, do you have anything you'd like to plug?
Sure. This is the Star Trek podcast. You can go to thepenskypodcast.com. You can go to the Penske file on YouTube. There's a bunch of stuff up there, too.
Awesome. And as I say every week, I am by no means an expert on any of this, so if you have anything you'd like to correct me on or anything you'd like to talk about, please feel free to email me at theprisonerpodcast@gmail.com. Or follow us on Twitter @PrisonerPodcast. And if you happen to be listening on iTunes, if you want to give us a rating or review, that would be fantastic.
Fantastic.
As long as it's a high review and not a shitty one. So, we will see you next time with Once Upon a Time. See you then.
See ya.
Secret Agent Man. Secret Agent Man. They've given you a...
Well, there you go. There was our coverage on Danger Man. I hope you enjoyed it. Thanks for listening. Be sure to check out the notes. There's a lot of fun stuff over there if you want to learn more about Danger Man. And next week, we will be back with the first part of our finale of The Prisoner, Once Upon a Time. Shit's about to get real. All right, see you later. Bye.
An evil mind. I'll be careful what you say.